What's up, guys? It's your boy Nick Hale, and we're back for another season of Enter the Muse. So, on this episode, we have a very special guest. She has traveled the world, met the Dalai Lama, almost made it up to Mount Everest, and went and followed a Vice documentary to find hallucinogenic honey. She has done this all before the age of 25. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Skye Burgess in the Muse. So Skye, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Where did your journey start?
So I think the last few years have been really interesting for me. When I left high school, I was 18 years old and I went for a 3-week holiday to Thailand, Laos and Vietnam with my older brother. He was 8 years older than me at the time. And as we were traveling through, it was my first time really seeing and experiencing the world. And I always knew I knew a little bit about the world, but I never knew that I knew nothing. My mind was absolutely expanded and blown, and I just couldn't believe there was just so many options of life to live other than the one I grew up to see. So we traveled for 3 weeks, and I was going to come home and start university and start work and start actually studying actuarial science a bit. And then we stayed at this water park backpackers in Cambodia where they were just having water slides and a blob and a Russian swing and all these cool things. And we didn't even stay there. We just went there for a drink, but they ended up offering me a job.
Wow.
They said if I stayed in Cambodia, they said they'll give me free food, free accommodation, free alcohol, and they would look after me.
And who wouldn't take that deal?
I know. And it was the whole thing. I was like, should I stay? Should I go? And we all got drunk and I was like, I'm staying. And then we called my family and they were like, no, absolutely not. Like, come home right now. And it became like this whole decision. And in the end, it was like, no, I can't stay. I have to go home. So I went with my brother the next day to the bus station, and as we're walking on the bus, he's walking on the bus in front of me, and I just stop and I take both my feet off the bus and I said to him, I don't think I'm going to get on this bus with you. So Whoa. He says, what do you mean? So I said, I think I'm going to stay. He goes, are you sure? So I said, how can I be sure? I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm going to stay anyways. And he gave me his phone because my phone broke and his medical kit. He gave me a whole bunch of stuff.
So you're planning on staying without a phone?
Yeah, I was going to just stay. Like
change your identity.
Exactly. He gave me everything. He says, whatever you do, don't die because mom and dad will blame me. So I was like, okay. It was probably the scariest moment of my entire life, even till this date. I was shivering, my teeth was chattering, and I thought I was going to throw up. I was so afraid to just be left alone in this foreign country. My brother drove off and I just looked left and right and I thought, what have I done?
That's crazy.
It was crazy. And then I was going to stay 3 months and I ended up traveling for another 13.
Wow.
Yeah. So I worked everywhere I went. I worked in Cambodia for a few months and then went to Thailand, worked there for a while. I worked in Australia for 3 months in a livestock farm. I went to Nepal and I worked there. And I came home 13 months later.
Wow.
Yeah, that was my first trip.
So what was it that made you like decide, okay, this is what I'm going to do? Because that's like a big step. That sounds like a movie, the way you describe it. Like your brother was going to take the bus.
It felt and
you
that were way.
Yeah, that's definitely a scene from a movie.
It felt that way. It felt, I think it was intuition. It felt deep in my guts. I've had that like perhaps once more after it. But yeah, it just felt like I hit a brick wall and I just knew that's what I needed to do. You know, I grew up in South Africa in a community where everyone kind of grew up, got a job, got married, had kids and died. And I was like, is this the life everybody lives? Is this the only life can live. And I always never resonated with that. And I thought that was never me. And then I went to Asia and I saw all these people living all different kinds of wild lives. And I was like, wait, there's more options. I can live any life I want. And it was that freedom. Yeah.
That must have been quite a culture shock. Like,
yeah.
How is, like, I know very little about Cambodia. What's it like there?
A very interesting place. So they actually had a genocide in the late 1970s, early 80s, where they lost like one third of their population.
Wow.
So very recently, so a lot of people there had lived through it. So they'd actually gone back in time a lot, because in the genocide, they killed everybody with a degree, all lawyers, doctors, anyone who wore glasses, all the academics, because they wanted a communist farming society.
Sure.
So they went back in time quite extensively, and they're still facing a lot of the repercussions of it. So that it, because of that, it does have a lot of its problems. But the people are so nice, very community-driven, family-orientated. They're very friendly. There's a lot of forests and waterfalls and plantations and rivers. And actually speak the language now. So,
oh, right. What yeah. language is it?
Khmer.
Khmer,
wow. Yeah. The Khmer people.
How long did it take you to learn that?
Quicker than you'd think.
Yeah.
So I speak quite a few languages.
Okay. I guess that will help then.
It was my second language I'd learned. So I learned Zulu fluently.
Okay.
So, and when I learned how to learn Zulu and how to learn a language, it made every language after that so much easier, because I just use the same formula that I resonate with and I can learn through association and spelling it out in my head. So it took me like a couple months.
Yeah, like languages, like the way it's taught in schools, especially here in South Africa, I think that's the reason. Like, I studied Afrikaans for like my entire years in school, and I still can't speak it fluently, because the way that they teach it, they teach it as like how to write it in a book. But I guess
conversational.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really love having a conversation with someone and they get so excited to hear you trying.
Right.
That's the big thing. When you try and people, it means so much to them.
Yeah, I was reading Playing the Enemy, the book about Mandela. It's Invictus. The movie is based on the book.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that he made an effort to like learn Afrikaans and things, because like when he's speaking to people, they'd get excited like, oh, this guy took the time to learn my native tongue. And yeah, that is something that like really helps, I think.
Definitely huge, big time. You know, that book is actually based on a poem.
Really?
Yeah. It's a beautiful poem. I can tell you a little
bit. I'll check it out.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's a lovely poem. So, he goes like, I'm the master of my fate, I'm the captain of my soul. It's the last two lines.
Whoa.
And that's been, yeah, that's been really something that I've held on to for the last few years.
And that's true. You are the captor of your soul, right?
Yeah, the captain of your soul.
Captain of your soul. That, yeah, you are. Because
yeah,
only you can direct where you want to go in life.
That's it. You're the architect of your life, and we have so much freedom to live any life we choose. Any one of us can, but it's mainly our mindset that keeps us stuck.
That's true.
Yeah.
So what made you, you were going to stay there in Cambodia for 3 months and you ended up staying 13 months and traveling.
Yeah.
How did that come about now?
So I traveled, while I was in Cambodia, I wanted to do a trip and I had to get a visa extension. So I went to Thailand and actually I ran into some trouble there my first time, because FNB thought I was committing fraud because I was still traveling. So they canceled my card.
Sure.
I had no money withdrawn and my phone broke. So I was alone in Thailand and cash, and I didn't eat for like 36 hours.
What?
I had to sleep on the beach. It was all, and I was 18, so I was like,
dude.
No. That was like my first real bad thing happening in a way. But this guy came to me on the beach and he says, why are you so sad? And I said, I'm just so hungry. And then he came and gave me a job. So I ended up working in Thailand in Koh Phi Phi. As a bartender and promoter at this like scuba shop, and like I had like a place to stay there and got some food and worked there for a while. Then went back to Cambodia and then had an accident actually in Cambodia. I went up a bridge on a motorcycle.
Whoa.
Yeah, that I was trying to do a 13-hour drive by myself to Thailand and back, another visa extension.
Okay.
And then after 12 hours of driving, I was coming back in the dark and I got run off the road and went up a bridge, and that was the whole thing.
Crazy.
That was the whole thing. So I owed a lot of money, so I had to go to Australia to make some money. And basically.
So what was your parents' reaction to all of this?
They were stressing. Shame, my poor mother. Yeah. I've aged her. Now I think they're more used to me. Now they think.
Yeah.
The thing about me is if you told me not to do it, I probably will definitely.
Right.
So that's the, like, I'm learning to deal with that, but that it's also pushed me to go on like a lot of adventures by myself and have a bunch of different experiences that I think a lot of people don't get to have.
Yeah, like, so. I don't know much people who do stuff like that and who get to tell those stories that you tell.
Yeah, not without scars. I've got a whole bunch of scars, like all the different accidents, I guess, like the different experiences. But, you know, it all great. You know what? Like, I love the good times that I've gone through, and I love the special memories, and I love the places I've been and visited. And, like, I'm very grateful for the good times. But the tougher times of my travels have been really what has grown my character. Like, I really value certain characteristics like courage and resilience and patience and compassion with people that are hard. And you can value all these traits, but only when you're given the opportunity to actually prove them and show that you are resilient, are courageous, can you say that's who I am. So my tougher times have really like depth in my character and made me who I am today, and I'm happy, I'm proud of that.
So you came back to South Africa a year later, right?
Yeah, I went to Nepal as well and worked there.
What was it like there? And which...
That's been my favorite place.
Really?
Yeah, for sure, yeah. I did Everest Base Camp there. Did the 13-day trek to Everest.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah, so I didn't go to the top, but I went, I climbed the peak next to it, so I went up to 5,600 meters, which was...
And how's the altitude over there?
It was, we acclimatized, so I dealt with it better than some of my peers. The one guy that I was doing it with had to get helicoptered down, actually, altitude sickness.
So how far did you guys get up?
5,600.
And how big is Everest?
Everest is like 8,448.
Wow. So you guys are like more than halfway.
Base camp one. I guess I've always wanted to do the top, and I think I will one day. But it's just about the money. It's like a $50,000 permit. So you're going to have to get like sponsored and all that. So it's definitely something I want to do. Eventually.
So do you go with a shaman who guides you?
You go with the Sherpas.
The Sherpas.
So people all over Nepal that carry your bags are called porters.
Okay.
But at Everest, they're the Sherpa community. So they Sherpas. And then they carry your stuff, and they taught me Nepalese. And I speak Nepalese. And we had it was the most incredible time of my life. Like, we were gambling every night, playing this Nepalese game called Dumbo, and drinking Roxy, the moonshine, having ginger lemon honey tea. I stayed there 3 months. We did a hallucinogenic honey adventure.
Hallucinogenic honey.
Yeah.
What is that, like a something that's like native to
Nepal? We found this like vast documentary.
Yeah.
Me and my best friend from Australia came and met me, and our friend from Thailand, and then this guy Galen from Oregon, and we just met on the trek, and we followed this vast documentary to every place he went, because no one knew about the trek or the honey,
okay.
So we had to follow the vast, and then we went to the same bus stations, the same town, spoke to the same communities, and we eventually found a guy who knew where it was, so we went on like this 4-day trek to find it. I had this panda suit, so I dressed up as like this panda and filmed this like mockumentary.
I'd love to see it.
Yeah, I'll show you. that was wild. That was a beautiful experience in my life.
So while you were like around there, you met the Dalai Lama, right?
No, that was I traveled actually quite a bit after. That was my first trip. And then I came home and I studied and worked. I worked every night waitressing, just saving money for travel. And then at the end of the year, I went to South America for 3 months. From my last exam, I just went straight to the airport, went by myself from November till Feb. And then I came home and did it again, studied and worked.
You prepared your parents for it this time, right?
Well, they still said you can't go, but I said if I'm paying for it myself, I'm going.
Right.
Like, I booked my ticket. I'm off. And then that following year, 2019, I went to Cambodia again in June, but then I did India by myself from November till February. And then that January 2020, I met the Dalai Lama.
Okay.
So that's been And then, then those were my first three trips.
So where about in India did you go?
Sure, all around. I spent just over 1 month in the south. So I started in Mumbai and went down to Hampi and Karnataka and Kerala and Alappuzar and we were like a houseboat just traveling around.
So did you visit like the temples and things?
In the north. So the south is more beachy, like it's Goa, it's more like a trance party scene. It's more like there are temples there and like rock formations. But then I went to Sri Lanka for 3 weeks and then I went to the north. And the north is, that's where they're like, the religious area and spiritual side of India is, I mean, where I found it.
Are you a spiritual person?
Yeah, I think so. I think whenever people ask me what I'm grateful for, my one thing I'm always the most grateful for in my life is my relationship to the universe and how connected I truly feel with life itself. And then when I sit outside and I feel the grass and like my trees and just breathe and just feel so dissolved and connected to it all. That's my most prized and significant relationship in my life. And then my second most important relationship is my one to myself. So yeah, I feel very foundationed in that.
It's an interesting way of looking at things.
Mm.
Yeah. So I want to ask a bit more about your travels. So after that, you went to Tibet.
So yeah. After Nepal.
Yeah.
So I went home after Nepal and then I went to South America.
Yes.
Yeah. I flew into Brazil. And then.
Which year was this?
This is 2018.
Okay. That was the year of, no, 2014 was the World Cup in Brazil.
Yeah. 2014 was the World Cup. Yeah. 2018, I flew in and I met up with a girl that's Brazilian that I met in Australia. And we traveled, and it was, I stayed at her house in Sao Paulo and then I went by myself. So then I went down through the coast of Brazil and down to Rio and then I went actually up to the Amazon rainforest, which I have a crazy story about there. That
cliche.
Yeah. it was crazy. We went like piranha fishing. I got this crazy photo of me like eating a piranha. Like we fished a piranha. Like,
wow.
Ah.
You caught a piranha.
Yeah.
By yourself.
Yeah. Then I pretended I was with like the guides, you know, like I flew into Manaus and then like I didn't book anything. That's one thing I don't do. I never book a thing. I only book my flight in and my flight out. No plans.
Whoa.
South America, my biggest plan was a circle.
You went to South America with no plans.
No plans at
People
all.
People go there with plans and they don't come back alive. Do you know that?
I always know I'll be okay and I don't like to be restricted. So I like to be like, what do I want to do today? Do I want to go to the beach? Do I want to go to another country? Do I want to stay in bed? Do I want to go to a restaurant? And you have all these options. So whatever you decide, that's your day. Like, I love that. I love that freedom.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I never plan a thing. But I was in the Amazon, so I flew in and I was like, this guy at the airport was like, Amazon. I was like, can you take me like in 5 hours time? Because it was like 1 a.m. And then I was like, he was like, sure.
When you're saying that, it reminded me of this saying. It's life passes most people by while they're making grand plans for them.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so true. It's been like my status for years. Live life, don't dream it.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
But the Amazon is actually.
Should get that tattooed.
Maybe I should. The Amazon was wild. So actually, it wasn't the best experience. It was cool experiences. Like, we like went hunting for like caimans. Like, not hunting, but we like grabbed them out the water. I've also got this photo of like a caiman. It's like a crocodile.
Okay, and I was about to ask, what is a caiman?
I've got a photo of my finger between its mouth and like.
Was it like a baby crocodile?
Yeah, and I was like this big.
Oh, they like don't grow.
They do grow big. They do.
Okay.
But they're just a South American crocodile.
Okay.
So we had cool experiences and we went to Amazon tribe and all that. But I actually got a very, very, very severe ear infection from the river.
Okay.
It's probably been to date the worst pain I've ever been in my life. We were literally in the middle of nowhere in the Amazon. No medicine. There's these two Uruguayans that had like two ibuprofen for me. I had one and that helped. And then I had one left. And I remember, because it was days of just this excruciating pain. We even tried to go to like a village and they tried to give me local medicine to sort it out. It just put me to sleep and I just like, it just, but then I woke up and still just terrible pain. And then I remember going to, like, I went to my bed, to, like, go to bed that night, and I had one ibuprofen left, and I knew I wanted to save it for the travel the next day, because it was a long travel to the hospital. And then you go in through the whole night, knowing you have this one pill that can help
yeah.
you in the most tremendous pain, like you're screeching in pain. You don't even want to make a sound, but it hurts so much. And by 4 a.m. I couldn't take it anymore, and I took the ibuprofen and went to bed, and then woke up a few hours later, pain again, and then had to take a boat and a bus and a boat and a bus
Whoa.
To get out the Amazon, get to the hospital. They put me on a drip. They sorted me out there. But I got 100% deaf in my left ear for actually almost the end of my trip, like a month and a half, almost 2 months. I was 100% deaf in my one ear. I never thought I was going to get my hearing back. But I accepted that.
Yeah.
I thought if I didn't, it's okay, because what can you can't change what's already happened. And I have appreciated things up until now. But then it gets worse.
Okay.
It gets worse.
Before it gets
yeah.
to worse,
yeah.
I just want to ask, would you... Having gone there to Amazon, getting an infection, would you go again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, no, for sure. I think, I don't think I'd get another ear infection again. Maybe I'd protect my ears. I love the Amazon. If I were to do it again, I would do it from Peru, because they have so many more species of birds and animals.
Okay.
So the Brazil side is the biggest. It's 50% of the Amazon is Brazil, 50% of Brazil's Amazon, but like it constitutes a large portion of it, but Peru is where a lot of the wildlife is. I would do it again, but if I were to go to South America again, I'd like to go further, either north to Colombia or south Antarctica. So that would be more of the mission.
Right.
Yeah. You're hearing the story gets weird.
Yes.
Shame, man. So the people that basically got me out of the Amazon, the tour guides that put me in and took
okay.
me out. It was very expensive for me to fly. Flights in South America are very expensive. So I wanted to fly to Peru, but because of the price, they said they can get me there for a quarter of the price. I just need to take a 20-hour bus. It's like, okay, cool. I'll trust you guys. You help me out and all that. So I bought all my tickets.
What do you do on a 20-hour bus? Like,
yeah,
I need...
You watch Netflix, you read
okay.
the book, you speak,
there's
you
Netflix
journal.
And that there.
Well, like, you download the movies onto your phone
right.
or whatever. I journal, so it also gives me the opportunity to journal. I've taken so many buses in my life and actually enjoy them. You nap, you meet people. But either way, it was going to be 20 hours. And get on this bus, board all my tickets, they send me off. Then eventually 20 hours go by, then 22 hours and 24 hours. I stop at bus stations they told me to stop at. Every bus ticket they sold me was fake. So I had to rebuy every bus ticket.
Oh.
The entire trip to get me, not even where I was trying to go, was 58 hours. I spent 58 hours going from like a few different buses that they gave me a map on to get to Lima, but I ended up even just going to Cusco. I didn't even go to where I was intending to go. 58 hours, I was 100% deaf in my one ear. We crossed borders, so the language changed. From Portuguese to Spanish.
Okay.
The currency changed. I had no cash.
Whoa.
The network changed, so my phone didn't work. and no one accepted my card, and now I'm 100% alone. I was 20 years old. But you know what? It was actually such a significant point in my life, because I remember looking at myself in the mirror in the window, like at my reflection, and I said to myself, and I held my own hand, and I said, if all shit hits the fan, if everything goes wrong, no matter, like, if no one's there for me, I will be there. And I'll be there to catch myself. And I knew that I had me. And no matter what the situation was going to transpire into, because I was there, I was going to be okay. And I just felt like I just caught myself in the safety net. And now going forward in my life, I always know whatever happens, the circumstances, as long as I'm there, I will always be okay. And it became so close with myself from then. And that's why I have such a close relationship with myself now. And I'm actually so happy that experience happened, because it's really constructed my character to who I've become. So and her foundation lead to becoming.
Yeah, like affirmations can like play a huge part to just like your mindset about things.
Yeah.
And it's also the energy that you're around and things. If you don't have that, because like it's very easy to be influenced by negative energy around you. And even if you're the most positive person, like that coming around, that can throw you off. But when you get it from yourself,
yes,
that adds another like layer. It provides something extra.
Yeah, there's a nice quote that says, we don't see things as they are, we see them as we are.
That's true. Mm. Like everything is your perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that short film that I was telling you about is called Perception.
Mm.
So in that film, the guy like is able to change his perception by all the perception of the world and time travel through how he sees the world.
Yeah, interesting.
And yeah, everything is that. It's like your feelings and things. One person's truth is completely allied to someone else. And everyone has their own stories and perspectives on things.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you just got to define it for yourself, how, what you believe in, but also hold things lightly, because so many times have I believed things so strongly and I turned out to be wrong. So it's always to be curious to other people's point of view, remain open-minded, but hold your principles and foundation strong.
Yeah, it's important to hold it strong, but also when someone does come with another perspective, should be open to learning that as well.
Always, yeah. And if it's a better perspective, then adapt yours and make it.
And
yeah.
So many people like are fixed in the ways, but I think now it's changing a lot, like with this generation. But yeah, like lots of people, that's why like countries, their laws are so rigid and things, and there's like wars were started for like no reason, just for like people's ego. Ego's another thing that really like plays into it.
But like we're talking about earlier, like people become the architects of their own life,
right?
And that has the potential for good, but also for evil and for bad. So it's that, that's why you also have to like encourage people and influence people to hold the right principles and keep on a good line, you know, because otherwise people can destroy things, because we all have the potential to do as well. So you got to just look at and see you have the potential for both, and then choose that positive path or encourage others to at least.
So what other countries are you looking forward to going, if you have
my trip went a bit further, just to go back. I went up actually to Peru. I went to Machu Picchu, and then Ecuador and the Galapagos, and Argentina and Chile through Patagonia. So that was, I got to travel South America quite well. Now if I'm looking for other countries to go to, I think I'd really love to go to Norway. I think that's a big dream of mine. See the Northern Lights. I think my father and uncle had a very special experience where they went there for something called soul tapping.
What's that?
So it's something that's similar to a concept called the Enneagram, which is, I don't know if you've heard of it.
I haven't.
It's like this kind of self-understanding. It's a human understanding tool where you understand self and others. It's an assessment of your personality, motivations, and characteristics. It is quite accurate, I found, and it really allows you, once you understand which type you are from 1 to 9, it really helps you understand yourself as well as others around you.
Is it the INTP kind of personality?
It's the same kind of concept, but it's a different tool. So they're both methods of understanding human nature. This is just another perspective on it. And then soul typing deals like with the personality, but also in your body and your movements and your gifts to the world. And it is very deep and insightful tool. But they went, my father and uncle, they went there 4 times when I was young. They went to Norway to do the soul typing, like retreat and understanding. They came back so different, like so enlightened, so patient. Like, okay, they came back completely different role models and mentors. So it's something I've really resonated with. And I'm actually writing a book about it now with my uncle.
Nice.
And so I would love to go to Norway and revisit some of the places they became enlightened at. So
how long were they there for?
They went there for four different occasions, I think, over a period of 2 years. Yeah.
That's interesting. There's like so many things like unique to some countries. Like I had this guy on my podcast. He went to Indonesia and he learned this a martial art that was only, it was only used by the royal family of Indonesia and wasn't allowed to the outsiders until I think 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Mapati Puti.
Oh, really?
And he took that concept of this martial arts and he is now in Utah and he's teaching, he's using this philosophy to teach like blind, help blind people to see, like using like touch and.
All right, guys. And now for a quick word from our sponsors. Psych, there's no sponsors. Well, you know what that means? That means that there's place for you to advertise your brand. Guys, this show has been around for 4 seasons. And if you want to promote your brand, this is the podcast to promote it. This podcast has been around for 4 seasons and it's available on every freaking continent. Guys, there's even possibility that it's available on other planets. Though, the analytics haven't proved that, but there is space for it. And if there's life on other planets, they might just be listening. And where else would you like your brand to be if it's not on Mars? Guys, Elon Musk is settling on Mars. And you want to have your brand being amongst the first to be on Mars. So there's no better place to promote your brand than on Enter the Muse. If you'd like to promote your brand and have it seen on Mars, then please feel free to email me on enterthemuseofficial@gmail.com. And now, back to the podcast.
So Sky, having come back to South Africa, what are you looking forward to the most? And what's your, I know you said you don't plan ahead, but what is something that you think you're going to be doing in the next few months?
So it's really interesting because I've kind of moved into the space in my life where I feel like I've accomplished a lot and I feel like I don't need to do more in my life to be more fulfilled and happy. But I would love to live the rest of my life that I have in a way of serving and in purpose. And for me, a large part of purpose is actually raising the vibrations of people around me, taking people from good to great, dealing with people and perhaps their demons, and unlocking people to become the best versions of themselves. So, as I mentioned, my uncle and I are writing a book. He wrote a book called The Secret to Higher Self-Living. His name's John Burgess. And I'm writing now The Higher Self and the Enneagram. So it's using that tool, the Enneagram, to and using higher self-like concepts such as like impermanence and death and purpose and non-attachment, and using the concepts with the Enneagram to help you become the best version of yourself. And then the two of us are looking to create retreats, actually, to Botswana and game reserves for people who want to come and learn about nutrition and mindfulness and yoga, and become the, yeah, and to work on themselves in kind of like a self-actualization weeks and retreats and programs, and that's what we're looking to offer. So that's my current plan for the year, is to build that and start that for them. And hopefully we'll be running our first retreat maybe around October this year. So that's the plan.
So where's the first? Botswana.
Botswana.
Botswana is the first retreat.
Yeah.
Is this a part of the nonprofit organization that you started?
No. So that was different. So
okay.
When I got back from India, after I met the Dalai Lama, which we can go back to afterwards.
Yeah.
When I got back, it was locked down. Dan got home just in time, which is really nice. You kind of
Got back before lockdown.
Just in time.
Lucky, because so many people got like stuck overboard.
Yeah,
like,
lots of my friends were stuck overboard. Yeah. I had lots of friends stuck in all around the world. So that was interesting. But I was lucky enough to be home with my family, who I'm very close with. And I really got to realize that nothing was something worth doing, and just find power of silence. And I really enjoyed that period. I know it was difficult for a lot of people, but I didn't find it too challenging. But coming to the end of 2020, a friend of mine from varsity, Joshua De Villiers, calls me up and says, do I want to throw a pub crawl for a Christmas pub crawl for charity? So
okay.
I was like, okay, sure, I can meet you now. So we were going to meet in Hudson's in Parkhurst, and we went and we approached all the bars, and we realized we're such a good team, and we made this like big pub crawl, and we went to go donate it to this orphanage in Heelbrow. A whole bunch of toys and games and food and essentials that we earned from the pub crawl. And we get to this building. It was a hijacked building, a 7-story building on Cotter Street in Heelbrow. And you walk in there and there's no electricity. There's water dripping down every floor, sewage everywhere. You look out the window, there's about 800 tons of trash in the building courtyard. And then you go to the second floor, and the only place in the building that has electricity is the orphanage. So you go into the orphanage, there's about 80 to 100 kids that they look after there. It's the bright light in this dark, dark, dangerous building that it was just so, you've never seen people been so absconded from human rights. Like, they just had no access to people, to sanitary conditions.
And this is right, like right here.
Right here, opposite the Constitutional Court.
Wow.
Opposite Constitution Hill.
How's that?
So, and there's about 200 kids that live in this building. There's about 800 residents. So it's a hijacked building. There's about 700 problem buildings or hijacked buildings around Johannesburg area. So it's a big problem that the government could be doing more, but it's a very hard problem to just say solve. And it gets solved out of nowhere.
Right. And so that's like just for the government, that just be like one of the problems that they're not dealing with.
Yeah, exactly. It's opposite the Constitutional Court, and it's next door the WITS Research and Health Institute. And there's sewage coming from the building all the way into the WITS RHR. I mean, you look at this and you're like, it's the juxtaposition is actually heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But we went there and we donated the stuff, and we just thought, we can't leave them like this. We can't see them and now leave. So we started donating to the orphanage on a regular basis, like foods and essentials. Then we were on this thing, though, we're going to actually make a big change. We're going to remove the 800 tons of trash in the center courtyard. So that's what we did. It was a 3-week operation. We had trucks, bobcats. I approach a lot of companies for sponsorship. Josh is the mind, and he has all the ideas, and he's very intelligent, and also a very powerful leader. Also very good at building and construction, so we made a very good team. I just got us all the cash and implements, like approaching people saying, please help us. So we had buckets, trucks, removed 800 tons. Over the course, we repainted the whole building blue, we waterproofed the building, we fixed electricity, there was like a hole in the elevator. We secured that and fixed all the safety issues there. We fixed all the staircases outside because they were rusted and full of sewage and very, like, very dangerous. We employed a lot of the guys in the building. We put them with the team so they can learn and be upskilled. So our main thing was about like job creation and upliftment of the community itself within this structure. So we also wanted to fix the structure, but also not leave the people behind. The organization was called The People The People for the People.
I saw that.
Yeah. So we did that, and then we worked also, that was our building sector of our organization. And then we had two others. We worked in the schools. So we got a whole bunch of kids into schools that weren't previously going for years, actually. And we got about 12 kids from grade 8 to matric. Full bursaries, and we did feeding programs every day, and we did mindfulness and yoga, arts and crafts, dance and music. So there's four every
so
week.
You got the sponsorship, and then they outsourced to the volunteers to come and teach.
Yeah, we got I organized the whole, I ran the school side of it, so I got volunteers coming in every week. We got we would do like big food shops, and then we would like space it out for the month, and have like big pots, and everyone had a different day that they were volunteering. I'd come twice a week myself in the mornings, and the rest I'd oversee. And then I would always just bring people in every week, and they would come in their slots. And then we also did rooftop farms. So we actually started a rooftop farm over the homeless shelter at Three Kotze. And we employed the people from the building to do the farm. So it gave some food to the homeless shelter itself. But the main intention of it was to eventually become a business for them, because we wanted to create more entrepreneurs within the country. We wanted to create more, there were so many employees, we needed to create more employers. So that was our big intention. So those are all our plans that we were doing. And then we did that for about a year and a half in Hillbrow.
Yeah, that's really good that you guys are like giving the people the power to do it.
And power to the people.
Power to the people, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Amanda, where to?
Exactly.
Exactly.
Because, like, you can only do so much for people. It's like that saying, you can either give a person a fish or you can teach them how to fish, and you guys are teaching them how to fish.
Exactly. You can't help a person also that doesn't want to help themselves.
Right.
We really want people to put their hands up instead of their hands out. So the people that really tried and wanted to make their lives better and wanted to, like, there was one guy, Jama, and he was like making all this art, and he was always coming to and helping, and he was always making more. So with the people that really put an effort in making their lives better, we really just went to those people and gave them all the opportunities to do so. Give them markets, give them supplies, give them everything we could have, and assist in every way we can, because we love people that want to uplift themselves, because it's so much easier working with someone that actually has that ambition.
Right. So, did you get any of those people who didn't want to do it?
Yeah, no, you're dealing with 800 people, and a large majority of them are alcoholics. To be honest, you're dealing with community that grew up in a culture of crime and violence, of alcoholism. A lot of them didn't get a good education. The crime in that area, it's a severely impoverished society. So you can go there on like a 9 a.m. Tuesday and be in, like, half the people are drunk. So you're dealing with, it's the social change actually became the most difficult out of the whole thing. The government and then the social aspect.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And it takes time to get the community to trust you as well. Because it's like, you go to this, like, seven-story building, this abandoned building, you're like, we want to clean it for free. And they're like, why? Like, why do you want to, like, why are you here? We're like, we just want to help you. They're like, no, we don't believe you. And you're like, please leave me, I'm just here to help.
Right.
It was hard to break.
Some ulterior motive.
Yeah, exactly. It took months to break the barrier with some people. Uh-huh. Me speaking Zulu really helped bridge that gap. And also I learned some other African languages while I was there. So we were in Hillbrow every single day. We both worked two jobs. I was working as a waitress, he was working as a doorman, and we're both studying our honours and our masters. And then we're doing this full time. Every day in Hillbrow.
Every day. While studying and handling a job.
Sometimes weekends we'll go have like quartz beers with the boys.
Yeah.
Go some of the 750 more Black Labels. We became like into Hillbrow.
Yeah.
I loved it. It was such a different experience than I think any South African really gets to experience on our side of the world. So it was really cool. Yeah.
So is it something that's ongoing?
I think the greatest struggle we ran into was the struggle with government. We were meant to get, we're meant to get this SEP payment, which is like the social employment fund. And a lot of people were meant to get it. And so much corruption actually happened that a lot of people, they're still saying it's coming, and it's been like over a year later. Like, it was just absolutely
Yeah, it's very slow. All of this government stuff is very slow. It doesn't happen.
And sometimes they say we're even not allowed to do it. Like, we'd be fixing the water, and we come and we fix it, and they would come to Joburg Water and be like, okay, cool, like, pay us now. Everything. The fire department wanted us to pay them. It was like, either we weren't allowed to do something, or we had to pay to fix something, or we wanted permission to do something. We were going to fund a whole bunch of, like, our own, like, to help in the city, to, like, fix water, to fix electricity, to fix sewage, we were going to fund it all through private sector and do it all ourselves and run the whole thing. We didn't need permission to do so.
Yeah.
And the government was like, nah. We even brought the mayor there. We tried to, and it was,
really?
you know, it got so hard and so draining. It's not an easy task.
I can imagine. That must be a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
Frustrating at times.
This whole organization, just for two people, was a lot of work. And it got so challenging. And then, and you're dealing with the social dynamics and this, which can be, like, also a dangerous environment. And for me, it got to a point where I just couldn't do it anymore. And we both kind of, he carried on for a lot more months after I had left to work in Europe, because I went and I changed paths there, and our business partner, Josh, carried it on for a while. But we both eventually have come to realization that we took on a big task when we were both very, very young. I was 23 and he was 25, and we both had never, like, had real, like, work corporate job experience. We want to come and help South Africa again, but we want to come back when we're more mature, when we have more respect, when we have more experience, and we can come back and actually make a real change. It was good learning and introduction.
And you also help people with doing that.
We didn't accomplish everything we wanted to, because we wanted to change so many buildings and turn them over and go around and really make a difference. We helped a lot of communities and people, but eventually we're still on that mind where we want to help Johannesburg in a very significant way. And we will, just not yet.
Yeah. And also for those people that you did help, I'm sure there's, like, a major change for their lives.
There was finally people who believed in them. We looked at them like as a full human being. Like, that's the big thing. I think a lot of people in poverty experience is that people disregard them. They don't look them in the eye. They don't treat them as an equal human being. And for us, everyone was our mates.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we're friends with everybody. Everybody was a person in our eyes. And everybody had the potential for greatness. And I still believe that. Everyone has potential for both, but everyone can be great. And if you want to be, we can help you get there. We want to support and help and serve. And it's so in line with who we are.
It's a lovely way of looking at things. Like, people get so caught up in their, like, day-to-day lives that they don't, like, sit down and consider other people and things. But, like, when you think about it, everyone is a person, the person on the streets, and it's always, like, you should help them.
Yeah.
Like, you should do that.
Their feelings just like you and me.
Right.
They're a human just like you and me. They're a soul. Like, we all are, you know?
And, like, let's say shit hits the fan, there's a Great Depression. Most of the people who, like, treat these people like trash, they could be on the streets with them.
Yeah,
who knows?
Exactly.
And then how's them going to be?
You know what? In the end, even if we were to go like a depression, we're stronger together. You know, it's when people actually work together. There's a saying, "Izan lazia gezana," one hand washes the other.
Mm.
And when everyone actually comes together and works to uplift, you can move mountains. You really can. But it's really through that power of people and coming together as a society that's really going to accomplish that. Everyone just needs to realize how connected we actually are. And once everyone realizes that that's the way it is, then things just get easier from there,
yeah.
I think. Yeah.
So after you did that, you decided to go to Europe.
Yeah, I'd finished university and I was moving out of the people and I had no, like, money really to my name, so I thought I need to go earn. So it's very popular to do the yachting thing.
Okay.
So I'm actually a masseuse,
massage
therapist. So I got my courses in Cape Town and I flew to Malta because I've got some friends there. And I ended up working, and then I found the job within 1 week, and I ended up working on a yacht in Europe 6 months. As a stewardess and masseuse, and that was very interesting work. It was very interesting hard work.
Yeah,
so it's good money and you earn well and you explore, and not as adventurous, I think, as my others, but
yeah.
much more luxury.
I'm sure.
I mean, it's right.
Yeah. So you spend, like, most of the time on the yacht.
Yeah, the first month I traveled, so because my job only started a month after I received it, because it was a brand new boat that was still being built. So I ended up traveling. I went to the Monaco Grand Prix, and I went to Venice and Florence, and I went to Sweden. I had the coolest guy in Peru. No, in Patagonia.
Is that a country?
It's a region.
It's a region.
in southern Argentina, in Chile. Okay. So I actually spent 3 weeks by myself growing up through Patagonia with a tent, sleeping bag, and sleeping mat when I was 20. And I went all through the Andes Mountains and Fitzroy. And it was just, I saw like a crazy glacier collapse in El Calafate.
Well, so, you saw it like in real time, haven't
you? Yeah, I'll show you a video. You're going to love it. It's crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah.
But I met this guy, we did this hike, and then there was this rave, and then there was this guy that was traveling the whole of South America by himself, without a cell phone, in a wheelchair.
Whoa.
Yeah. So then it was
you said without a cell phone, man. Okay.
Yeah,
and then you say on a wheelchair. I'm like, okay, now that's.
We've been at a rave, like ripping his wheelchair up, and I was like, this is the coolest guy ever. And like, we had him for dinner, and you know what? He didn't have a cell phone, so we've been keeping contact over
email the last
few years, like pen pals. I was like, you're so cool. Let's keep in touch. I love keeping in touch with my friends. And I went to Europe, and he was like, you must come to Sweden. And I was like, it's not in my budget. And he was like, if you fly there, you'll come. He stays on an island.
So he's from Sweden?
Yeah.
Okay, and he's doing the trip in
South America? Yeah, he was traveling. And he's come visit him, and I went to go stay. He stays on this island off Stockholm, and it's like a forest. And I think I spent like 100 euros in like 8-9 days there, like literally nothing. We just went camping, and he's got everything kitted out for his like wheelchair, and like he runs an organization there for people with disabilities, to physically train them, but also to show them that no matter what your disability might be, you can still accomplish anything you want. So yeah, he was very cool, and I think he'll stay with him there. I've met some cool people around the world, hey? There's some cool people out there.
Definitely.
Yeah.
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 So how was Australia?
Australia. So that was a very interesting experience as well. I first flew into Melbourne, and actually a lot of my greatest friends come from Australia, because the backpackers in Cambodia that I worked at for so long was built by Australians and Irish guys. They were just a group of friends that built the whole thing themselves. So I went to go visit them in Melbourne, and they're like crazy guys, like graffiti artists, tattoo artists, like wild guys, do BMX riders. They're all like crazy. Not a full box of chocolates, none of them. And I love it.
Sounds about right for Australians and Irish.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So I went to go visit them, and then I worked on a farm there actually for 3 months. I worked in 2 hours south of Adelaide on a livestock farm. Shearing sheep and herding cattle, and
how long was that for?
3 months.
3 months.
Yeah, doing like tree plantations, all that. I learned how to drive a car there. So
really?
I turned 19 on the farm.
Oh.
So I was 18 and I went.
We're driving tractors.
Yeah, I was driving tractors and like a ute, like a bucky, and then in the morning you would go down the path, and the kangaroos would be racing your car. Like as you're going, the kangaroos are everywhere. Can't look without seeing a kangaroo somewhere. Yeah, so cool.
I thought that was like a myth. Like how people say, like in South Africa, you see lions walking on the streets and things,
well,
but you really see kangaroos bouncing around.
Not in like Melbourne or Sydney, but I was working in the country. Yeah.
Okay,
so
there's like lots of kangaroos.
Gags, so
and
many.
Wallabies.
I saw only one wallaby. But otherwise, so many kangaroos. And I even held a little baby one. So cute. Yeah, so driving tractors there, and then I did that for 3 months, and then and worked at a tavern as well at the night time. They actually left to go to Samoa, the owners of the farm, so I was just by myself on the farm for like 3 weeks with the dogs. And I was like, this is crazy, they trust me. To be like this little 5'1" girl. but I did it, and it was cool.
That's amazing, man.
And then I traveled the east coast of Australia. I went to the Grampians, I love hiking, obviously.
Yeah.
I love my hikes.
Did you get to spend time with the Maori?
I didn't. I met one girl when I was working in Nepal. I was working in Nepal on a construction site for earthquake recovery, just for a month. You lived in like a tent in like the middle of nowhere, and it was like literally middle of nowhere.
So Do you prefer like the warmer regions or colder regions?
Anywhere where there's mountain. I would give my heart for a mountain. I've cried tears of mountains. I've had the most exceptional times of my life. I'd spent 3 months in Nepal in 2017, and that's been always my favorite trip I've ever done. It's where I would love to settle one day. And then 2019 or 2020, actually, when I went back there to meet Dalai Lama and Darren Shalala, it was my first time back to the Himalayan region, and it was like to see it, and I was there, it was like a dawn, and the sun started rising, and just this red and orange like light just hit like all these snow
like mountains. The Lion King.
Literally, I was in tears, looking at it in tears of just awe, awe inspired tears. So it was stunning,
So, yeah, how did that come about? I didn't know like outsiders were allowed to go and meet you.
Neither did I.
Really?
So I arrived in India in November 2019 and I met this guy that I went to go watch him speak. So I thought to myself, he's like, yeah, I just emailed him and whatever. So I was like, okay, cool. Like, I want to go watch him speak too. So I thought if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right. So I wrote him a whole letter. I poured my heart out and I was like, speaking of how beautiful my experiences have been and how cool life has been and how grateful I am. The only thing I can think of that I actually want is insight of how I can best serve the world. So I wrote this whole letter and then they actually got back to me and they were like, thank you so much. He says, but you unfortunately can't get to meet him because he's old and he's sick and won't be there at the same time. We won't be able to watch him speak, but thanks for writing. And he wrote me a whole blessing. So I got like a little letter from him. So I was like, thanks so much for just getting back to me, you know, like that was amazing. Then 2.5 months later, I just so happened to still be in India and I was in the Rishikesh, the yoga capital of the world, yoga meditation capital in northern India by the Ganges. I was going to be going into an ashram there. And I get this email on my phone and I got Wi-Fi and it was like, listen, if you can make it 14 hours north of where I was by tomorrow morning, you can be invited to the blessing ceremony. And the last bus is in an hour's time in the city of Dharamshala.
Yeah.
So, and I was on the other side of the river. So I look at my friend and I said, we either get up now and we run or we give up. So I said, I think we better run. So we get our paper, food, and we run sprinting down alongside the Ganges, sprinting through Rishikesh, go all the way across the river. You know the bridges with all the prayer flags and like a little metal, and it was like the monkeys everywhere. It was like a whole thing. And then you run across the river, and then I have to go all the way back now to get to my hostel, run out the mountain. Like, oh my god, I'm sweating, my pants everywhere. Please, go grab all my bags. I run to the road, pay on the way out. I just say bus station, a random guy stops his bike. I get on his bike and
like a
scooter.
Oh, okay.
And I wasn't even holding him. I had my bag, my jacket, and my backpack in my bag. And we're now weaving through traffic, zooming through to get to this bus station. This random stranger just picks me up. I'm like, cool, I'm going with you. There was so much traffic at a point that he had both hands off the steering wheel. So I was like, he was actually swimming through traffic, what? Pushing the cars. We're wheezing through. We get to the bus station. The bus isn't there.
Whoa.
So we start going down the road and then we see the bus. So like it just had gone out and he stops the bus in the back in front of the bus.
He stopped the bus in front of the bus.
And I stopped and I go out and I went to the bus. Like, excuse me, sir. Is this bus going to Dharamshala? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, okay. Cool. Get on the bus, sit down. I was like made it, you know, like actually I'm going to make it. And my phone was going to die, so I only had time for one more phone call. I called my uncle and he was like, how's Scotty? Like, I'm on my way to the bush at the moment. And I was like, oh, that's cool. You'll never know guess where I'm on my way to. And then I get to Dharamshala like 3 a.m. And then I go to and then it was still dark. And then I was like trying to knock on all these doors, trying to find a place to like just shower because I couldn't go to the other room. Like,
yeah, and again, it's like very sacred. And
yeah, it was very sacred.
Can't go there
and shower. And also I stank, you know? And it is sacred. And so we get to, and I finally found this like, I think it was like an Airbnb. It was like, not an Airbnb, but like an old hostel. The guy was sleeping behind reception, like I wake him up, and now there's like white girl that he probably hasn't seen. There's not a lot of us out there. It's like I'm standing above him. I was like, sorry, can I have a place to sleep, please? And then I went to the room and I had a shower and I put on this, I had this beautiful Nepalese dress I got quite a few years prior from a great friend of mine. And, I went to the blessing ceremony, and it was only Tibetans. So it was about 98% Tibetan, and there was 10 internationals. So one from each continent. So I was the African. I'm the African.
Representing,
and I was like, cool. Then we went there, and he gave a little speech, and he gave us all a blessing, and he wrapped this beautiful white scarf around me, and this red band he put on my hand that I wore for years. I still have it, but not on me anymore now. He looked at me and he said, hold my hand. So we went to take photos. Never thought we were going to get photos because we didn't have cell phones. So they took our cell phones away and all that. And he said, hold my hand. And I was like, of course I'll hold your hand because it's Dalai Lama. I looked at him and I said, you're so wonderful. It was just so empowering. It was just so big. Like, we're in the Himalayas, northern India, it's freezing cold. Everyone's so cold. Everyone's in thermals. He's just in a robe, but he's so warm. He's so peaceful. He's so calm. You know, he had such this magical aura about him. So I looked at him and I said, you're so wonderful. And he looked at me and he put his hands on my face and started patting my face and like scratching my hair, which I love. It's my favorite. And I was like, I just smiled looking at him. And that's that photo of him.
Yeah.
Like caressing me. And holding my face there. And that was a very magical and special moment in my life. Then I was there and in Dharamshala, and then I went down to Rishikesh and went to an ashram there. Dara did this whole retreat of 3 hours of meditation a day, 2.5 hours of yoga a day.
Do you still meditate?
Yeah, I mean, not still. I had a big break in between. I think I'm not being as disciplined.
And how long do you meditate for?
It depends. Usually about 15 minutes, so not like the 4 hours like I was doing there. But it can be anything like that's necessary, between 10 and 20 minutes. And I use an app called Waking Up. It's Sam Harris's app, and it's so easy, and they walk you through it, and you just breathe and connect to breath, connect to silence. And it really just changes how I deal with life in general and change my whole mindset, and it's been a big positive in my life. So I would recommend it to anybody.
So if you could meet 5 people, dead or alive, who would it be?
That's interesting. If I can meet 5 people, dead or alive. Marcus Aurelius.
Oh, yeah.
Marcus Aurelius is one of my absolute favorite mentors, and I love his philosophy.
Yeah. And his son was Commodus, right?
I think so.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, he was such a deep, inspirational guy, especially for his times, the times that he lived in, and he wrote, like, all those like philosophical books that now people can grasp, but back then it was like gladiator times, like people like dying from the Black Plague. The Black Plague wasn't even there.
They say that philosophy doesn't necessarily grow wider but grows deeper. And it's the same philosophies we're talking about. It's just, and they're the same words. It's just when people can actually develop the understanding of them and really and go within themselves and understand what they're actually trying to say.
And isn't it crazy, those thoughts, some of these books that I read, these thoughts are something that I've had, but I didn't articulate it the way they did, but I felt the same feelings that they did all those years before when they wrote it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Very interesting.
That's why I feel like this podcast called Into the Muse, we are vessels, just coming. We are all vessels, nothing really special, just here to tell stories, to capture what's through, to let go of what's in you. That's why I love art. All kinds of art, that's expression of oneself.
Yes.
And all of these teachings and things, they are stuff that's been passed down. It's floating around somewhere in you, in everyone, and only certain people are able to put it out there in certain ways.
Yeah, they say that sometimes the truth and understanding is not necessarily created but found and discovered. Yeah, so it's very interesting that I love I love the depth of thought and what those ancient philosophers and teachers.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Really resonate with that. Another person I would love to meet, this is my hero and mentor, is Eckhart Tolle. You know, trust a new earth and the power of now.
Oh yes.
I have been rereading and rereading his book constantly. Well, I've been rereading A New Earth, but I read all of his books. I've got all of his books. I've got like all of them. I take the small ones with me wherever I go. And since I was 15, 16, I've been reading, re-listening. And it's just all about that, like going back into the present moment. Experiencing that fully now, you know, not attaching yourself to stories of the mind, understanding the awareness behind the voice. You know, you're not that thinker that chats, you're the watcher, the one who listens. And it's that he talks about the soul and who you truly are, your essence in this world, and that connection to source and everything that is. He says one thing that I love, which is, he says, like a ray of the sunlight. Is still the sun. You look at a ray of sun, it's still the sun. It is the sun. It's nothing but the sun. There's nothing for a part of it that's not the sun. To say it is the sun is a little bit ambitious, but it is. It's nothing but it. So are we manifestations and rays of sunlight of the source of everything, that one thing that makes up all other things. It's like that's the way I see the world, that we're the manifestations of that one big thing. So we are God, we are the universe. And they say we are the universe experiencing itself in human form.
I put that.
Yeah, we are the universe. To say we are the complete thing is a bit much, but we're nothing but it.
We're aspects of it.
We're aspects of it, as everyone, everything is. So it goes back to that, you know, connection, how I see the world, which we're all just one thing, experiencing the universe in different ways. So it makes everything just love, you know. I think that source is love. And if I like to describe myself, when people say, what do you want to be or do? I just want to be love. And then I'm happy to live and die that in that way. So, Eckhart Tolle is the puppet.
Yeah. So those are two.
You have to think. Probably my grandmother. She's passed away now.
Okay. Sorry about that.
It's alright. She was so comfortable with death, as we're both my grandparents on my father's side. They were both. There was actually a beautiful video before she died, and she was saying that if death comes, let it. She says the coward dies a thousand deaths, but the valiant tastes of death once. As Shakespeare said, it was. Because you can either die every day from anxieties and fears, or you can just let it come when it happens. And they were both, they were big on the beauty of impermanence and being comfortable with death, and they'd be your friend. So it's fun that she's gone. But she taught me chess, which I love playing chess. And she taught me my great philosophies, and she taught me about poetry, which I love to write poetry, so I get that from her. But because she died so many years ago, I would like that experience with her again and learn what I didn't get to back then, I guess.
It's nice.
Yeah. René Descartes, all these old things, or maybe Plato.
Plato.
I love his allegory of the cave and his thoughts and ideas and things. I'd love to meet him. And then there's this also a really cool guy. There's actually this movie on YouTube called Chasing Bubbles.
Chasing Bubbles.
And it's about this guy who makes his own boat. He buys a boat, but then redoes it up and travels around the whole world three times. And he's got like these crazy videos he's made of all these crazy adventures. He really reminds me of another friend of mine. And he passed away, but he lived one of the most adventurous and true to himself lives. That I rewatched that movie three times. Like, this guy lived a life that he wanted to live, and it had so much adventure and kindness and welcoming people onto his boat, into his space, and just and doing silly things. And oh, I love this guy, I admire him the way he lives his life.
Would you ever do that? Get a boat and then.
Yeah. Like if I think on a boat, I wouldn't do it alone. I would like to do that with a friend. Yeah. I know the exact friend I would do it with.
Yeah.
This guy that actually ran the backpackers. He built that backpackers I worked at, and he gave me the job in Cambodia that changed my life. To me. He was living in Alaska now for 2.5 years, and then now he's living in British Columbia and he's born land there. He's the best traveler I know.
Yeah.
She's traveled the whole world. A lot of my Australian friends and my traveling friends are
Australians under. Love traveling.
They do.
I've met a few Australians who do like traveling. Yeah.
Yeah, no, they love it. And this group of friends, they've traveled way more than I have.
Yeah.
They've lived beautiful lives and learned lots from them.
But you could say you've lived like a bunch of lifetimes. How old are you? Like
20, I'm 24.
24, exactly. Like you've lived like lots of people. Like they can't say they've only lived in like one town their whole lives.
A lot of people do. Yeah. A lot of people do. And you know what? No one has to live the same life as me or as anyone else. I love the life I've lived and I love traveling, and that's what's true to myself. But I think anyone can find a lot of value in life by just, as Eckhart Tolle subscribes to, just be present and be here now. And really, when you listen to the birds, truly listen. When you're with your friends and laugh and have a good time, be there. Don't be thinking about other things. When you feel the tree, feel the life within it. The small things of life are actually the big things. They actually are. And when you truly gain gratitude and appreciation.
It's the little things that matter.
It is the little things that matter. They matter so much. They are everything. So it's anyone can live a life as fully as I did in a different way, as long as they being as present and living it really, truly, fully away from the ego in their minds and that chat, they calm in that chatterbox and they becoming that master of their mind, and the real journey's within. I encourage anyone to travel and go expand their mind and see the world. But in the end, life can be anything you choose.
Mm.
And that's the beauty of it. Just make sure you're making it a choice and you don't just become complacent and not living this life because it's the one you've fallen into and not ever living this life. Open your mind, expand your horizons, and know that you can. Anyone can.
I love switching things up. Like I grew up in Durban and then I've been to like 7 different schools and things. So nothing, I don't view anything as permanent. Everything is temporary.
Nothing's permanent. Yeah. That's actually the beauty of life. Because when it's bad, you can be like, it's impermanent, it's going to end, I can get through it, this too shall pass. And then when it's good, then you'll be like, okay, well, this is going to end, I'm just appreciative now, this will end. This too shall pass, I'm just appreciated now and be in it. So it's, and all things have that flow. All things are coming, then you're in it, then it's over, then it goes in peaks and valleys, and it's the nature of life.
Yeah. Just looking at the world, right? Where it's at now and where it was a few years ago. Everything's always changing.
Always.
Things.
Yeah, life has changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember like during the, people are now saying post-pandemic, pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
Like that time, I was like listening to the Bob Dylan song, times are changing, and now times have changed.
That's still changing. Heraclitus says, a man cannot stand in the same river twice. One, because it's not the same river, and two, because he's not the same man.
That's true.
Times change and we change with it.
Mm.
Even if you go to the same, if I went back to Nepal now, I'd go there as a different me.
Mm.
So it's like, you don't really get a second experience of life. That's why you have to really be as present throughout it all. And the more present you are, the longer it is.
Mm.
I mean, life can feel like forever if you're really there for it, not looking at it through the veil of your mind.
I think that's a great way to end this podcast.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for coming on the show. It was lovely speaking to you and listening to your stories.
Thank you for the opportunity. This has been so fun.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yay. Thanks, Nick.